Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the Vietnam veteran behind the Minnesota Gold Star paddle, get an update from the Navy League from Minnesota, and hear from the senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
October 13th is the Navy's birthday. On that day in 1775, the Continental Congress passed legislation authorizing the construction and purchase of America's first Navy ships. Every year, men and women aboard ships around the world witness a Navy-wide bell ringing. The ceremonial objective is to instill in the sailors and remind the public the importance of and the sense of pride in the Navy's history and heritage. The Navy has an age-old practice of sounding the bell during the watches on the hour and half hour. This symbolic hallmark effort is as appropriate in today's nuclear and missile-oriented Navy than it ever was. From their historic sailing vessels in the late 18th century, to every command today, bell ringing signals that someone stands the watch. Bell ringing serves as a powerful and tangible reminder of the history, heritage, and accomplishments of the Navy and an enduring tradition of the Navy birthday celebration. To the proud men and women who serve in our United States Navy, congratulations to you and your proud naval history.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is a businessman from southern Minnesota, a book author, an accomplished canoeist, and a Vietnam veteran. And he's here today to talk about the Mississippi Gold Star paddle. And his name is Jim Kriegler. Jim, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate the invitation.
Jim, I was being as kind as I could be there. I didn't introduce you as a crazy chopper pilot, but I want to go back to when did you join the military and how did that work for you?
Well, I was drafted into the military in 1970. And through a period of happenstances, I became a warrant officer helicopter pilot, and I flew in Vietnam from September 71 until September of 1972.
And of course, that was a time that was pretty much familiar to me because I was over there 71 and 72, but we were kind of holed up on an Air Force base in Cameron Bay, and you were flying around the countryside doing a lot of missions every day.
Yes, Tom, I was. I flew with two units over there. I flew with a cavalry, air cavalry unit, Alpha Troop 7th to the 17th Cav out of Phan Rang. We flew primarily the southern part of the Central Highlands. And as you know, during that time, Nixon was withdrawing the troops and downsizing units. My particular unit, the Cav unit, was downsized. And after 4 months, I was sent to the 129th Assault Helicopter Company, a very fine unit of pilots and crew. And I flew the rest of my tour in the Central Highlands around Kontum and Pleiku and Quinyon and Ansan. That's where I flew.
So, Jim, for our younger listeners, in those days in Vietnam and all during the Vietnam conflict, the helicopter was the major means of transporting our troops to and from the base to their missions and out to the battle. And you flew at times many, many missions every day.
That's correct. For most of the pilots in my unit, it was not uncommon to fly 30, 35, maybe 40 missions in and out of combat. We used to keep a grease pencil where we would do hash marks on the windshield, and at the end of the day, you would count those hash marks. So it's not unusual for a helicopter pilot flying during that period to have many thousands of combat missions.
And on a busy day with 30 missions, you were delivering troops and ammunition and supplies, and on the way back, you were bringing back the wounded.
That's correct. We were the lifeline in Vietnam. Many of the outposts that we supported were really surrounded by enemy, and we were the only way for them to get in and out, either water or ammunition or food. And, of course, every time you would go in, any wounded or people that were their tour was up, we would take them back. That included, unfortunately, transporting the bodies back as well, too.
And you were busy enough that the politics of the day really didn't enter into it. You were taking care of the soldiers you were bringing there and trying to get them back in one piece and accomplish the mission and just take care of each other.
That's correct. We fought for each other. The war was very controversial. In 1972, it definitely affected the morale of the troops. not having the support of our fellow citizens back home. But you know what? We fought for each other. These were wonderful men, very patriotic. They were the best of the best, and still to this day, some of the finest pilots, most professional pilots I've ever flown with.
Our guest today is Jim Kriegler on Minnesota Military Radio. And Jim, you just finished this a couple of months ago, a canoe trip, 2,250 miles down the Mississippi River. What in the world ever got into you to do this, Jim?
Yeah, you know, you think it's kind of, you're probably thinking a crazy helicopter pilot would
Absolutely.
Do something like this, but it probably was a little crazy. But I'll tell you, it all started 45 years ago. My roommate, First Lieutenant Thomas Shaw, and I made a pact between the two of us in the middle of combat that if one of us was killed, the other one would do their best to be the burial escort officer, take the body back to the family, and console the family. The day after we made that pact, my roommate was killed in combat, and I had both the honor and the privilege to escort his body back. And that was the first time I met a Gold Star family. Was in May of 1972. So forward 45 years later, I, for the most part, was not really dealing with my Gold Star family, but was reintroduced to them many, many years later. And because of that, was able to talk with a number of Gold Star families, Vietnam Gold Star families, and I found that they really did not receive the recognition that they the recognition or honor that they deserve. So I thought I'd do something audacious to get some recognition for them, or at least get some awareness raised. So I decided to raise awareness by going down the river solo in a canoe. And that's why I went down the river.
And you told me off the air that your son suggested that to us. I wonder, how's your relationship with your son, Jim? What kind of a suggestion is that?
Well, he knows I'm an expert canoeist, and he knows how much I love canoes, especially Winona canoes. I'm in Winona, Minnesota, and the Winona Canoe Company custom made a canoe for me to go down the river. I'm very deeply honored that they would do that. So he's also a canoeist. He thought it was a good idea. What better way to get to talk to the heart of America and get some recognition and awareness for these families than going down the main artery of our country, the Mississippi River? I mean, that watershed covers 2/3 of the United States. And so I did.
Of course, Vietnam War was an unpopular war, and the Gold Star families that lost the 58,000-plus troops weren't treated like they might be treated today.
No.
And of course, those of us that were there remember every one of those people that we know that we lost.
Well,
this was your way to draw some attention to honor the Gold Star families.
Yes, it is. And I met 350 Gold Star families along my trip, and I gave every one of them what the military would call it a challenge coin. I called it an honor coin. And believe me, I've cried with hundreds of those families. I was, in most cases, the only U.S. citizen that had ever thanked them. And, Tom, the reason I'm on this show is that I don't want to be the last to thank them.
Well, and I hope you won't be, and if we have anything to say about it, we'll keep talking about this, Jim, and supporting you. But back to this 2,250-mile canoe trip. Mississippi River is a dangerous river.
No question about it. It is a dangerous river. It was flooded for the first part of the river until I got down to Cape Girardeau. And the most dangerous part was between St. Louis and Cape Girardeau after the Missouri River comes into play. It was 24 feet higher than it normally is, and you can imagine how dangerous that would be. I was fortunate. A little messenger from somewhere came and talked me into getting off the river until the river went down to its normal level. So I actually got off the river on Memorial Day this year and came back to Winona for 2 months, did my business, and then got back on the river.
Well, Jim, we're glad you made it on that trip. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jim and his mission to honor the Gold Star families from the Vietnam era and the book he's written called Mission of Honor, A Moral Compass for a Moral Dilemma. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Imagine your 18- or 19-year-old son is drafted and sent off to fight a war on foreign soil. Now imagine that he comes home to you in a coffin 6 months later. Your government gives him a brief military burial, gives you a flag, and a few of your relatives treat you to a breakfast at Perkins. And that's it. You go home devastated. There is no recognition, no support network, and no one ever talks about it again. This scenario was real for many families who made the ultimate sacrifice during the Vietnam War. Many thousands of these families have received not even a simple thank you for their great sacrifice. This is Tom Lyons, and I'm talking with Jim Kriegler, who was a helicopter pilot in the Vietnam War and who has written a book called Mission of Honor. And part of his mission is to honor Gold Star families from that era. And Jim, I think that's an excerpt from your book, and it's an eye-opener and an awakener.
Yes, it is. And, you know, for many of the families that I've met and talked to, that story rings true. It always seems to be the same. Because of the controversial nature, we just didn't talk about it. And so consequently, those families, and frankly, Tom, our country, has not healed from that. And it's my opinion that, first of all, these families deserve honor and respect. And this is a wrong that we can right. And many of your listeners can right this wrong. I first attempted when I went down in my river mission, which we were talking about, I was trying to get normal citizens to thank these families. But that seemed to be a lot of people are really probably wouldn't go that far to look up a family because there's no database of Vietnam Gold Star families. You really got to go to a lot of effort to find one, or maybe you have to know one. So what I'm trying to do right now is raise awareness, raise money for a charity that gives back to them. It's the American National Huey History Museum. It's also called American Huey 369. And I'm trying to get a Gold Star family awareness date moved to the day before Memorial Day, the Sunday before Memorial Day. You see, right now it is September 30th, which is probably a good day, but nobody knows about it. And it has nothing to do with military or honoring those that have given the ultimate sacrifice. I also discovered during my trip that many normal Americans outside the military do not even know what a Gold Star family member is. We have to change that in this country because those families have sacrificed a son in Vietnam, a son or a son or a daughter today. We need to change that.
Jim, for our listeners out there, the Blue Star families, Gold Star families, all goes back to World War II. And if you hung a Blue Star in your window, it meant that you had a family member serving in the war. And if you had lost a family member serving in the war, then you hung a Gold Star banner in your window. And that's where Gold Star came from. And the tradition throughout World War II and Korea was well kept. When those that lost their lives in the war came home, they were honored quite well in most cases. But Jim, it's my theory that after World War II and after Korea, which were both a world war and a bloody war, the children of the World War, which was us, the baby boomers, ended up going to Vietnam, and the country was in a hangover mode. They didn't want to hear about going to war. They didn't want to talk about it. And, of course, it led to a situation where we weren't treated very well during those times. And correct. The Gold Star families were forgotten.
That's correct.
Since then, we've made it our business to make sure that it never happens again.
That's correct.
And you're talking about a gap here where the Gold Star families need some recognition, need someone just to come up and say thank you.
That's correct. And we need more awareness even about what a Gold Star family is. And so my thought is if we can just move the day to the day before Memorial Day, the Memorial Day, we honor our dead that have sacrificed their lives for us. And let's not forget about the families, because really, Tom, the sword that slays the warrior in battle remains in the heart of those that are left behind.
Jim, well, can you give us a little bit more about the charity American Huey 369?
Yes, it's based in Peru, Indiana. It is a flying museum, so we have 12 UH-1 Hueys that all flew in Vietnam that have all been refurbished. Well, not all of them. We've refurbished three of them. The rest we use for parts. We do not have hangars. We do not have maintenance hangars, storage hangars. museum facilities. We've got one that's donated right now. So I've really taken it on myself to spearhead the fundraiser and raise $4 million to build this, the remainder of this museum, which gives back so immensely to our veterans, to our Gold Star families. If you could see the faces on these families after we give them an honor flight, you would be as passionate as I am about building this museum. We need $4 million. We're at $700,000 right now, so we're almost 25%. Frederick Smith of FedEx fame has given us a challenge of $100,000, which I'm not counting in that total I gave you. And if everybody listening to this program would donate a small amount, we could get there.
So that charity is a 501(c) charitable organization called American Huey 369.
Correct.
We're speaking with Jim Kriegler on Minnesota Military Radio. And Jim, I want to talk a little bit about a book. You've written a book called Mission of Honor to help people understand the complexities of the Vietnam War and sacrifices that these families have endured. It also has a message for America, and I'm sure that message is tied to the byline on the book, which is a moral compass for a moral dilemma.
Yes, that's correct. I think the war itself was a moral dilemma. That's not the dilemma that I talk about in the book, but I wrote that book because, you know, forgetting is not healing. And remembering and honoring those people that have died and made a difference in the world, like my roommate, is healing. And so that's what the book's about. There is a message in there for America, I think one that we could utilize today. It's the moral compass that my roommate gave me. And the book's available at all fine bookstores, as well as Amazon.com. It's called Mission of Honor by Jim Kriegler.
And Jim, I just want to go back to you lost your roommate, and most of us were in Vietnam War, either got an R&R or something called 7 and 7, 7 days R&R or 7 days R&R plus 7 days leave. Mm-hmm. You spent yours bringing your roommate back home.
Correct. Myself, two pilots were killed, myself and another warrant officer named Dennis Fauché. We were burial escort officers, but the only way we could really do that duty was to take our R&R to do it, and both of us decided that it was worth it. And so we gave up our R&R to go meet with those families, to console them, and to thank them for that sacrifice.
And when you said earlier that you met your Gold Star family, you got reacquainted with the family of your roommate that you brought home to bury so many years ago.
Correct. 40 years later, I met them at the High Grounds in Neillsville, Wisconsin, a beautiful place. A wonderful family, and I will never become disconnected with them again. And it's the Shaw family from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And they are the reason that I am so passionate for this good work that I'm working on.
Jim, we got about 2 minutes left. Can you give me a little more on the book, Mission of Honor, A Moral Compass for a Moral Dilemma?
Sure. Well, it's actually a story about the bravery of some of the pilots. I don't consider myself a hero in the book. The real hero was my roommate, Tom Shaw, and many of the wonderful, wonderful helicopter pilots that flew in that war. As you know, there was very little protection for those pilots. That's why so many of them were wounded or killed. But they were great Americans. We would never leave anyone on the ground, or including the Vietnamese at which we supported, or the Koreans at which we supported. It's about my time in Vietnam and the impact that my roommate had on me, and the impact and his moral compass can have on you and the rest of America, actually.
Jim, do you think someone saved you so that you could tell this story now?
I think this, frankly, is my destiny.
And writing the book and taking a crazy helicopter pilot, taking a 2,250-mile journey alone down the Mississippi River and surviving.
Yeah.
There must have been a reason.
Well, that was just the beginning. So the hard part is done. The river trip was hard. It's done. Now it's time to get recognition. It's time to raise awareness. It's time to raise money and build that museum. And for all your listeners, I know you have hundreds of thousands of them out there. I would very much appreciate your support on this.
All right, Jim, it's been great to have you on the show. And for our listeners, you can find the book Mission of Honor, A Moral Compass for a Moral Dilemma by Jim Kriegler at any of our good bookstores. And don't forget the Huey's 369, American Huey 369, if you want to help Jim on his mission. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Jim Kriegler on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we get back, we'll have an update from the Navy League of Minnesota. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get an update from the Navy League in Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Hunting season is upon us, and as Minnesotans, hunting is embedded in our culture. Families, friends, and colleagues take part in hunting together, making memories last a lifetime. Each year, organizations around the state provide disabled veterans with the opportunity to hunt. As Minnesotans, many of us share the common bond of fishing and hunting. For many service members, it's the sounds, the smells, and the memories of the great outdoors that brings them back to Minnesota when they are away serving their country. Events like this connect our state's heroes with the best hunting guides while providing a therapeutic environment to heal in the outdoors. After all, it's because of the sacrifices of our service members and veterans that we are able to do the things that we enjoy most in the great outdoors. Thank you to the individuals, veteran service organizations, and private companies for giving your veterans, our veterans, these wonderful opportunities.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is the president of the Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council, Brian Scott. Brian, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom, for having me again. I appreciate you being part of your show.
Brian, you usually come into the studio and talk to us today, but that's a little difficult. Where are you?
I'm actually at Naval Station Norfolk for the commissioning of the newest Virginia-class submarine, which will be USS Washington for the state of Washington, number 787.
Now, you've been to quite a few commissioning ceremonies. Doesn't that get a little bit old, or as president of the Navy League of Minnesota, that's a requirement, I suppose?
No, it's not a requirement, but it never gets old. What's interesting, Tom, is going to the all of the commissioning ceremonies, all the programs are pretty similar, but I've been to one for pretty much every ship type we have, except one, and that'll come up in a couple of years. We'll talk about that a little later, but it's always good to attend these commissionings. And one of the quotes that they always say is time-honored traditions. And you know the military has its traditions and its pomp and circumstance, and that's inspiring and very patriotic.
Navy does it as well as anyone. Brian, before we get into that, can you briefly tell us what's the mission of the Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council?
Well, our mission is to support, and support's a big word, but it is support, our local commands here in Minnesota. We have a naval recruiting district based at the federal building and at the airport, and we also have a naval operations support center, which supports 700 Minnesota drilling reservists. Those drilling reservists do come in from the five-state area, but that center supports multiple units. So, and we adopt those units, we support them, and then we also, as an adopted unit, of course, USS Minnesota, SSN, our 783, our fast attack submarine. So we've got a lot to do. We also support five naval sea cadet programs, and the sea cadet program is analogous, I would say, to the Boy Scout programs.
Our USS Minnesota nuclear-powered attack submarine is out on a mission, so we can't talk about that, but it's a Virginia-class nuclear-powered attack submarine, the same class as the USS Washington that you're out there for the commissioning for.
Yeah, and what's interesting about the Washington, it's called a Block 3, and they've done some things different, and this is all public, so we're not talking about anything that's top secret, but they've changed out the missile tubes to two or three units, I think two, of six missiles each versus 12 individual missile tubes. The Minnesota, in its bow, has 12 individual missile tubes. I've stood over them. They've decided to put less perforations in the hull, and so it literally looks like a revolver. You open up one, you got six missiles. You open up the other, you got another six missiles. And they're, like I said, they're putting less perforations into the hull, and it evidently is less expensive, more efficient, and probably easier weapons release as well.
Now, Brian, I know that you have two children that joined the Navy, and I understand that one of them should be around Naval Station Norfolk at this time.
Well, in just a few minutes, we're gonna catch up with each other. She is based on USS Harry S. Truman, an aircraft carrier number 75. She told me a funny story just yesterday. The new commanding officer who came on board in mid-July gets on the 1MC, tells the entire ship, Steelers won, captain out.
Well, we know where he's from then.
He loves his Steelers.
Now, Brian, before we get off the USS Harry Truman, I understand your daughter was driving that ship. I think I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, she is a ship driver. What she stated is the two most favorite positions she stands watch is helm, which handles the steering wheel, for lack of a better term, which is about the size of your car wheel, and lee helm, which stands right next to the helm, and lee helm controls the speed of the aircraft carrier, both of which are amazingly, you have to work in tandem. In one case, she was literally plugged into a supply ship next door that has to match the speed. And if they don't match the speed, a lot of damage occurs because things snap.
And she's been in the Navy less than a year?
She has been now a year, yes.
And she's driving, helming the USS Harry Truman. What an amazing story.
Well, it was funny is on a couple of different presentations, a year and a half ago when she was her senior year in high school, she put our car into a snowbank, and a year later she's driving an aircraft carrier. I mean, Navy expects a lot of their sailors.
I hope she learned something from that snowbank and doesn't do anything naughty with an aircraft carrier. We're speaking with Brian Scon, the president of Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Brian, I understand that the newly commissioned USS Gerald Ford is also there, and that's a new class of aircraft carrier, isn't it?
It is. What's interesting is about 3 years ago, we had the commanding officer of the Ford in town in Minneapolis for our Navy ball, and he told us about the new technologies to the extent that he could, but the two most well-known, and I would say even controversial, are the new catapults, which are not steam-based, but they're based on basically big magnets. The value in that is almost no maintenance compared to steam, which is highly corrosive, basically maintenance hogs. But there's question, of course, on the technology, but they right after commissioning, which happened in July, they put her out to sea, they launched, and they landed. The other new technology is the advanced arresting gear, which is also different than the Nimitz-class carriers. I couldn't tell you how different. But I do know that there's been some controversy on using the new technology there, too. But in that scenario, a week after commissioning, they both successfully launched a Super Hornet, and they landed the Super Hornet, and everything worked. She right now is actually on the same pier as my daughter's carrier. I saw her today. So what's interesting, too, about the Ford is they've reduced the amount of elevators. They've gone from 4 to 3. More deck space. They've actually reduced the size of the island, which is where the helm is, and all the other radars, and they've moved that back. So whoever has to drive that, it's quite a different experience manning the helm there versus the Nimitz class.
If our listeners go online and just look up the USS Gerald R. Ford CVN 78, there's a series of photographs of when she was being built and a lot of information about this new class of aircraft carrier. And Brian, I understand that there's another one going to follow it shortly, the USS John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, the legacy of John F. Kennedy, obviously, as we know, is a very historical legacy. And number 67 was named after John F. Kennedy. That carrier has been retired a number of years. And now, as Navy tradition, the next carrier gets number 79 is going to be named John F. Kennedy. She right now is about 60% complete. And what's interesting about that is with the Ford kind of being delayed, but actually being delayed a number of years, her commissioning this year will follow much closer to the Kennedy's commissioning than normal. And that's a good thing. We're going to add a carrier. And then much of the technology that's being tested and the, quite frankly, the cost overruns will not occur in the John F. Kennedy. And she will be much more complete. Huntington Ingalls, the company that's building her, says they're actually building the Kennedy with less modules than they were building the Ford, which I found really interesting.
And Brian, we just got about a minute left, but I understand Naval Station Norfolk is one of the busiest bases in the country.
Well, she is the largest base in the world, the largest Navy base in the world, with approximately 100 ships, give or take. That includes of all types. That includes fast attack submarines. That includes destroyers, cruisers, and then amphibious assault ships, which much of what you've seen in the hurricane relief has been from the USS Wasp and the USS Kearsarge, which we call big deck amphibious assault ships. They're about the same size as a World War II aircraft carrier with a straight or axial deck, and they're tremendous assets for humanitarian assistance. So the Navy base here has, like I said, 100 ships. They also have a Naval Air Station next to me, and I'm getting an air show right now of Hawkeyes and CODs, which are the cargo planes that fly out mail and other things and personnel.
Brian, if you could stand by just for a moment, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Brian Scon, the president of the Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council, about the upcoming Navy Ball and the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to the president of the Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council, Brian Scon. He's usually in the studio, but this week he's on a joy tour of the Navy out in Norfolk, Virginia.
And yeah, thank you.
Brian, you're going to get a chance, I hope, to tour the aircraft carrier that your daughter serves on the helm for. Hard to believe that we've got 18- and 19-year-olds driving aircraft carriers and destroyers and all kinds of things, but they grow up fast in the Navy, don't they?
They certainly do, and I would like to mention again, my son is actually in Naval Station Kitsap, Washington, which is in Bremerton. He's on USS John C. Stennis, number 74. My daughter's on USS Harry S. Truman, number 75. So East Coast, West Coast carriers.
So your son's in the guard in the Atlantic, your daughter's guarding the Atlantic, your son's guarding the Pacific.
Absolutely.
Well, how about that? The Scon family's doing a good job. Brian, you've got a big bash coming up, the 2017 Minnesota United States Navy Birthday Ball.
That's right, and it's our website's navyballmn.org, navyballmn.org, and each year we have a Navy Ball right around the birthday of the Navy, which is October 13th. Originally, 1775 is what's recognized. And we host it here in Minnesota. We usually have about 300 to 400 people. This year, we've got a special guest, which is incredible, actually. It's the second in command of the U.S. Navy, Vice Admiral Bill Moran. Again, he's the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, reporting to only the Chief of Naval Operations. So it's pretty significant that we have the second in command coming in. And it is a public event. We welcome folks going to our website, ordering some tickets. It's Tuesday the 10th is our last time to order due to the facility requirements, but it's in the Brooklyn Park area. All the data is on our website at navyballmn.org, but it is a time-honored tradition, and we do all the pomp and circumstance of the U.S. Navy, those traditions you'd expect.
So it's a formal Navy Ball. It's open to the public. A deadline to register is October 10th for the October 14th event. And where is it again?
It's at the Marriott Northwest in Brooklyn Park. Used to be known as the, I'm blanking, but it's on 81 and 694 in Brooklyn Park.
And your primary guest this year is the number two, the second in command of the United States Navy, Vice Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Bill Moran. And navyballmn.org is the address to go find out information for that. Do it quick. Cutoff is October 10th for the event, October 14th. Brian, I've just got about a minute left. I want to get an update on the construction of the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Yeah, pretty exciting. I have Wisconsin as a territory, and so I went up and looked at the shipyard across the river, and there are four Freedom-class littoral combat ships on the water, with another two in the large buildings that are getting ready to be launched. And then it's next up is us. So steel has been cut, and then the keel authentication ceremony will be taking place in January, maybe February. Things are pushed off a little bit. There's a lot of work going on at that shipyard. It's fast, it's furious, but we're excited that we're getting close to being next up.
Well, keep us up to date on that. We want to go out there and travel with you and do a show from that event in January, February, wherever it comes up. And be safe in Norfolk.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on today, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. That was Brian Skon, President of the Navy League of the United States Minnesota Council. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Tom. Once again, it's great to be with you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Sergeant Major, it seems like every time I've talked to you, I'm welcoming you back from somewhere or you're off to somewhere. Where were you the last trip?
Yeah, you know, this was a great opportunity for me, more so actually for our soldiers of our Bravo Company from one of the 194 to spend some time in Sweden. So the Adjutant General and I just recently returned from visiting those soldiers that were over there training with our Swedish Armed Forces counterparts.
Sergeant Major, we've seen a lot of pictures of that on Facebook. It looked like it was a little different training from some of the other stuff that we've observed over the last few years. How did it compare to training in Norway or Croatia?
Yeah, so I'll tell you that it was a different type of training for our soldiers, our newer soldiers who haven't had the opportunity to maneuver in that type of a landscape. You know, we've been fighting the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, doing a lot of desert training. You know, I think one of the last times we spoke about the NTC, the National Training Center, and, you know, that's desert operations. And that's not what they have in Sweden. That's not what they have in Norway and obviously in Croatia. So for us to have the opportunity to bring our tanks, our Bradleys, over to Sweden and learn or relearn in some cases how to maneuver in a landscape that's not desert was very, very interesting and rewarding, and that's what made it so different and beneficial for our soldiers.
Sergeant Major, we were up to Camp Ripley last week, and I got to see an M1 Abrams tank up close. I heard a rumor, though, and I have to ask you this question. Did we lose one of those in a bog over in Sweden?
Well, I can tell you that it wasn't officially lost, but we did get to exercise some fantastic recovery operations. We had a M1 Abrams tank breakthrough into the bog. It started to sink, and as we were recovering it, it started to sink a little bit more, and we actually have a picture of it where just the gun tube is sticking out of the ground. But here's the great thing, Tom, about our service members, our maintenance staff. They were able to recover that vehicle to get it out of that bog, and within 36 hours, that thing was cleaned up and back on the battlefield. So it just speaks volumes to the soldiers that we have working for us, the maintenance crew, the recovery ops soldiers that went in and took care of business for us to get that thing back in the fight.
Sergeant Major, somehow I knew you were going to turn this into another great opportunity, a great training opportunity. Save a tank, clean it up, put it back in action.
Yeah, you know, and not to be outdone, Tom, it wasn't but maybe 2 days afterwards that the Swedish Armed Forces did the exact same thing and got to exercise their recovery operations as well. And, you know, with our tank, it was nice because we were working right alongside of the Swedes, and they were helping us recover, and you know, we were working together to get through this problem set. So it was just great training all around.
Somehow or other, I smell some senior enlisted advisors setting this up as an exercise and seeing how the troops react.
I'm not going to take credit for that, but but it sure sounds good, doesn't it?
Sergeant Major, where are you going next?
Yeah, so the next opportunity I have is to travel to Macedonia. As you know, we've got the partnership with Croatia. They're a part of the Adriatic Five. And so we'll travel to Macedonia later on or early part of November to meet with the chiefs of defense of that area. And, of course, I'll get the opportunity to meet with my counterparts again from Croatia and the surrounding region, the Baltic region.
Sergeant Major, we had the Navy League of Minnesota on today talking about all of that. And it used to be the slogan, join the Navy, see the world. The Navy's got nothing on you.
Well, I'll tell you, this has been just a great opportunity. I do get to see a lot of the world, and the best part about me having the ability to travel is to see our soldiers, our airmen, over in these other countries, working with our partners, working together, building relationships, hoping that we never have to work together in real-world situation, but knowing that if we do, we've got a relationship and a foundation set that we can do that and accomplish any mission put in front of us.
And the serious message there is we've been over there, we've trained with them, we know them. If there is an emergency, you're ready to go.
We are ready to go, absolutely.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today.
Hey, you bet, Tom. Thank you for the opportunity. I hope that you have a wonderful rest of the day. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Before we go, we have one announcement today. The Department of Veterans Affairs is holding a clinic for veterans and survivors to help file claims for benefits, submit evidence, and meet with VA claims processors. Members of the public who support veterans are also invited to attend this family-friendly event. There will be live music and activities for children. It'll be this coming Saturday, October 14th, from 11 to 4 at the Roseville VFW. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brian Scon, Jim Kriegler, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shalado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we take the show on the road to Federal Premium Ammunition to meet the new leaders of the Commander's Task Force representing Minnesota's veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.